I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you're interested in becoming a Patreon sponsor for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, then just go to our official website, which is bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and you'll see the link to becoming a Patreon sponsor yourself in the upper right-hand corner, or check out the link below. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we are going to dive a little bit into the magazines again. The topic for this week's show will be bodybuilding in the movies. I just this last weekend saw a movie called Love, Lies, and Bleeding, and it's a brand new movie that stars Ed Harris and Kristen Stewart, and it features a female bodybuilder in the movie, and it actually takes place in the 1980s. It doesn't take place in current times. So I thought it would be interesting to see how this women bodybuilder was portrayed, especially in the 1980s, which was a really great period for bodybuilding, because bodybuilding was very popular in the 1980s and women's bodybuilding really got started in the 1980s. Unfortunately, they did not portray this character who was a bodybuilder very positively. When she arrives into this town in New Mexico and goes to this hardcore gym, the character meets Kristen Stewart's character, and then they develop a love relationship, and Kristen Stewart turns around to steroids and starts giving her steroids. She says she was natural before that, and I guess she's getting ready for a competition in Las Vegas, which is like 4 weeks away. So once she starts taking these steroids, she literally starts growing from her very first shot. It's like the Incredible Hulk, where her muscles are just bouncing out of her frame. And it was just completely ridiculous, of course. And then she also becomes completely psychotic and ends up killing people, and she's completely out of control. So in other words, another very bad stereotype for the bodybuilding world, someone who is obsessed with steroids and becomes a psychotic killer. And just the way they portrayed her was like a complete monster once she started taking steroids. And I was really hoping that it would show something positive about bodybuilding, but of course it didn't. And then when she did go to the competition, and they kind of glossed over it, there really wasn't much footage about that or much interest in that. They just kind of showed her warming up, and then she had another kind of a breakdown during the middle of the contest and ended up punching out all these girls and going to jail. So it was just another really bad image of bodybuilding. And I just wondered, Pumping Iron was released 47 years ago, back in 1977, and I think that was probably the last positive representation of the bodybuilding world. And that really wasn't even a fiction film. That was a documentary. And before that, they had Stay Hungry, which was kind of a quirky movie based on Charles Gaines' novel from 1972. And Stay Hungry came out in 1976. And that was Arnold's debut, really, into the Hollywood scene. He had done Hercules in New York way back in 1970, and then he had some bit parts in some other movies, but this was like his really first starring role. He was third lead in the movie behind Sally Field and Jeff Bridges, and he also won a Golden Globe Award for that, for best acting debut. And the movie was kind of mixed. Talked to Charles Gaines, and Charles said that his book was kind of a tragedy, where the movie Stay Hungry was more of a comedy, and that was because the director, Bob Rafelson, who was very famous director in Hollywood at the time, back in 1975. He had just gone through a tragedy in his life where his daughter had died. So he did not want to make a tragic movie. He wanted to make a comedy. And that's really not what the book was about. So it ended up being very mixed. Like I said, some people liked it. Some critics liked Stay Hungry, but a lot of people didn't like it. And they didn't like the way the bodybuilders were portrayed. But that was probably the last time where they had a real bodybuilding person who was portrayed in a movie. So I thought it would be fun to go back into the magazine, since I was going to go back and read some magazines this week, and look at some old articles of Stay Hungry and Pumping Iron from the bodybuilding magazine. So I went back to Muscle Builder magazine, which had a lot of articles about Pumping Iron and Stay Hungry. And then I also found one in Muscle Mag International. So that's what we're going to be sharing on the show today. Bodybuilders in the movies, and going back and reading some old articles, since it doesn't seem like bodybuilding is going to be portrayed positively in today's movie mindset, which is, like I said, almost amazing. Pretty amazing when you think about that pumping iron was around 50 years ago, and this is still how people think of bodybuilding. You wonder, like, how does the general public feel about bodybuilding? I know when Joe and Ben Weider were around, Ben Weider, of course, wanted to get bodybuilding in the Olympics because he thought that would legitimize bodybuilding as a real sport, with that it's in the Olympics, it has all these international countries involved in it. And that was very, very important to Ben. That was like his lifelong dream that was never realized. He tried to do it for decades to get bodybuilding in the Olympics, and it never happened. And then, of course, Joe Weider wanted bodybuilding to be accepted by the general public, which that dream kind of did come true because everybody now does work out. There's gyms all over the place. Working out is an accepted part of society, where back when Joe started the magazine back in the 1950s or 40s, that was not the case, of course. And Joe saw the future where everybody was going to be working out and everybody was going to be eating better and taking care of their bodies, and it's kind of accepting the bodybuilding philosophy, which really has happened. But bodybuilding itself, I think people still misunderstand it, and they still look at it as a bunch of weirdos and freaks. And that's not true, of course. Bodybuilding is a great sport, and there's a lot of normal, really good people involved in the sport. And to just stereotype everybody as a steroid freak or just a crazy person is just really kind of disappointing. I was really disappointed when I saw this movie. So, anyways, we will get to those articles in a second. All right, what else is going on? Well, they had the Arnold UK over the weekend out in Birmingham, England, Dorian Yates's old hometown where he had his gym. And it was kind of a repeat of the Arnold Classic that took place in Columbus, Ohio, 2 weeks before. Hadi Chopin won again, and he beat Samson Dauda, who looked much better. Samson, since the last contest, he has fired his coach, Milos Sarsef, and he used his wife's coaching. And he did look much better. He kind of did close the gap. But Hadi was just too hard, and he's just got that razor-sharp conditioning, and Samson wasn't able to overcome that. But they only had like seven competitors, I think, in the show. Akeem Williams was the guy who really moved up. He was sixth in Columbus and he moved up to third. He looked much better in Columbus at the night show. So he had the momentum going and he looked much better at this show as well. So he deservedly got third place. So good for him. And then Wesley Vissers won the classic physique again. So Wesley is on a roll and he should be really tough competition for Chris Bumstead at the Olympia. Ramon Dino did not show up. So it was a pretty easy win for Wesley. And then Arnold gave an interview. It was on streaming again for free, so that was pretty cool over the weekend. So I got to catch some of it. It was a little bit earlier. The evening show was at 3 o'clock instead of 7 or 8 o'clock. And Arnold did an interview. I saw it today. It was pretty good, but I saw he did one with that Jocko. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. I think his name is Jocko Willett. He has a YouTube channel, so check that out if you're interested. I watched that the other day, and Arnold was telling some really cool stories about shooting with Annie Leibovitz from Rolling Stone and Andy Warhol, the other famous photographer. So that was really cool stuff. So check that out. That kind of got me thinking about reading some of these older articles when Arnold was just in 1977 promoting bodybuilding, promoting pumping iron, and he was really on a media tour. And that's kind of when the world got to find out about Arnold Schwarzenegger, was in 1977. He was saying a lot of outrageous things in some of these magazine interviews like Playboy and We Magazine and Rolling Stone. Very interesting period in Arnold's life. I really liked that period in his life when he was very honest and very articulate with the media and trying to make a name for himself and also trying to promote bodybuilding. So check out that interview if you get a chance. We didn't have a show last week. I had a seminar out in Massachusetts. I was at Guaranteed Fitness again. This was my fourth time in the last couple of years at Guaranteed Fitness in Sterling, Massachusetts. We were staying in Worcester. And so me and Lee Haney and Linda Murray were all up there. So it was really great to see Lee Haney again, hang out with him all weekend. And the owner, Bruce, put together a little birthday party for me because it was my birthday last Sunday. So last Saturday, he had like a dinner, invited like 14 people from the gym, and Linda Murray was there and Lee Haney and everything. So that was really cool. And they sang happy birthday to me. So that was cool and got home kind of late. So that's why we didn't have a show last week. But I am back now, of course, back on track. So hopefully we'll get some guests coming up soon. A list of people I'm trying to get a hold of. You know how that goes. Slow motion on that. But I'll keep trying. All right, guys. Well, let's read some of these articles. I got about four or five. We'll see how far we get into it before we call it quits. So this first one was about Stay Hungry, and this was from the November 1975 issue of Muscle Builder magazine. So this was before the movie even came out. Kind of a short article. It's supposedly written by Franco. I'm sure Franco did not actually write this, but it was just kind of a preview of the movie Stay Hungry, kind of just an article about what Arnold was doing. So it's titled Arnold on Location by Franco Colombo, IFBB Mr. Universe. It said he tries acting, stars, and Stay Hungry. Can he follow in the footsteps of Steve Reeves? I love to show off, grins Arnold Schwarzenegger, five times Mr. Universe and current Mr. Olympia. Maybe that's why acting came so easily to me. In a way, it's the same thing as bodybuilding. When you compete, you're showing off your talent, and that involves acting. Your attitude before an audience and judges is much the same as working in front of the camera. The internationally acclaimed bodybuilder has taken time out from training to star in United Artists' dramatic comedy Stay Hungry, a film about bodybuilding, which was filmed in Birmingham, Alabama. Arnold plays the role of Joe Santo, Mr. Austria, who comes to Birmingham to compete in a local contest. He becomes involved with Mary Tate, played by Sally Field, an attractive young woman who works at the gym where he trains. There, he befriends a Southern aristocrat, Craig Blake, played by Jeff Bridges, who can't seem to make a commitment to anything or anybody in his life. The climax of the movie occurs during the competition for which 10 of the country's best bodybuilders have been cast to play themselves. When Arnold Schwarzenegger was only 15 years old, going to school in Graz, Austria, he was determined to become the world's best at something. A natural athlete, he tried soccer, swimming, skiing, and wrestling. Although he was very good at all of them, he didn't think he could be outstanding. He started bodybuilding as part of his training for the other sports and found that his body responded well to it. Arnold decided that he had finally found the sport at which he could be the best in the world. At the same time, he caught the eye of Joe Weider, the famous trainer of many bodybuilding champions spanning a period of four decades. Arnold accepted a long-term contract to come to the United States and train under the direction of Coach Weider. That was 6 years ago. Since then, Arnold has won the Mr. Olympia title five times. Joe Weider had truly created a great bodybuilding star from his young Austrian protege. At first, it was just a competitive sport, reminisces Arnold, a way of getting to the top. The more I analyzed it, the more I realized it was an art form as well. I could actually change my own body from one form to another. I compared it to sculpture and saw a very close relationship to it. After a few hesitant weeks, Arnold is beginning to enjoy acting, another art form. I'm very relaxed now, but like everything I do, he says, when I first started and didn't know what it was all about, I was nervous. Bob Rafelson, the director, would say to me, "Do it over again." No one has said that to me in years, and I was not prepared for it. I took it personally, and after he said it the third or fourth time, I took it to mean that I was no good. Later, to my relief, he explained the technical reasons for my reading a line many different ways so that he could choose the best mood for a scene. I'm learning a lot about making movies from Bob, continued Schwarzenegger. He has a lot of patience and he explains everything to me. Joe Santo, the character Arnold plays in Stay Hungry, is a talented bluegrass fiddler. For 2 months, musical director Byron Berline worked with Arnold, teaching him how to finger a fiddle. "I can now play two songs," says Arnold proudly. "When I join a group of professional fiddlers in a scene, many people believe I'm actually playing the music. Either Byron is a great teacher or I'm a good student," he adds modestly. After the movie's finished, Arnold will go back to Santa Monica, California to start training for the Mr. Olympia contest, which will be held in Pretoria, South Africa in November. "To me, bodybuilding is a hobby I would be into even if I weren't competing," he says. "I do it for my own enjoyment because it makes me feel good." As far as his budding acting career is concerned, much will depend on the encouragement he gets after Stay Hungry is released. "Who knows," he shrugs. "If I believe I can become outstanding, I might decide to be an actor. If a 90-pound weakling like Woody Allen can do it," he jokes, flexing his massive biceps, "I can too." All right, that's it. So that was obviously before Arnold won his last Mr. Olympia before he retired in 1975. And of course, that was the basis for Pumping Iron. All right. All right. So this article comes from the March 1977 issue. So the March issue would have come out later in the year, right, in 1977. And Pumping Iron was released in January of 1977. So this article was probably released after that. It says the genesis of pumping iron. Charles Gaines and George Butler have taken the facts of bodybuilding and given them the power to enchant and intrigue in the way man has always best understood with art and drama by Armand Tanney. Like the hero of his novel Stay Hungry, Charles Gaines had a privileged early life. He grew up, as he puts it, atop a mountain comfortably. Like in the book and the halfway popular movie made from it, Chuck left home and all that money at 18 in search of a world he figured had meaning. That was a good move because along the way he met another maverick by the name of George Butler, a British Army kid who had been around the world. And the two of them put together a book they called Pumping Iron. The thing sold 140,000 copies, all about bodybuilding. Now, who would have thought of doing anything like that about the business of muscles? Certainly nobody directly connected with the sport of bodybuilding ever thought of it, or if they did, were able to do anything about it. Yet here were a couple of outsiders, Gaines the writer, Butler the photographer, neither of whom had ever written for or had a picture published in any of the currently popular muscle magazines, suddenly commanding national and worldwide attention in a sport whose advocates directed a mixture of venom and roses at their effort. Pumping Iron became a bestseller. How fateful that a book about building muscles had become the biggest hit of its kind in the publishing business. None of the other sports like football or baseball or even shuffleboard had ever come close. The idea for the book grew as subsequently was made into a movie starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. Bodybuilding itself was peripheral to the story, but understandably became its main attraction. Gaines' treatment of bodybuilding was by far the most accurate ever given the game. Fictional attempts by many other writers have all missed the mark. Spurred by the success of Stay Hungry's fiction and Pumping Iron's fact, George Butler produced and directed the cinematic version of Pumping Iron, a feature film complete in the can awaiting distribution. A half hour of it was shown at the recent Mr. Olympia show in 1976 at Columbus, Ohio. The response was terrific. The team of Gaines and Butler was formed with a story they did for Sports Illustrated magazine in 1972 on the Mr. East Coast in Holyoke, Massachusetts. Gaines wrote the story, Butler took the pictures. The vast circulation of the magazine tapped an audience that had never heard of competitive bodybuilding. Stay Hungry had been in the bookstores and people began calling Gaines, asking what was this thing about bodybuilding, including Sports Illustrated, who asked for a story. That was followed with a story for We magazine on Arnold. Butler and I couldn't believe the public reaction when we first got into this subject of bodybuilding, said a startled Gaines. People, especially those on the East Coast, acted like they'd never heard of it. It seems strange when you consider that other writers, some of them very good, had been covering the game for years in the muscle magazines and had never ventured into the bigger markets. Pumping Iron, interestingly, has been selling to all kinds of people, not just the bodybuilders. George Butler sees its rocketing popularity this way. Bodybuilding is a unique sport. There's no ball or hockey puck. There's no way you can take your eyes off the people who are doing it. The bodybuilder does his thing alone. It's an exercise in seeing. This movie, Pumping Iron, more than anything else, is about people and what makes them do things. What will interest the bodybuilding fans is the insight to the private lives of the people they see on stage. Most fans never see what goes on inside Gold's Gym in Venice or Mid-City Gym in New York City. The film Pumping Iron has literally covered worldwide bodybuilding. The company shot 110 hours of film in 5 countries and 8 of the United States. It filmed shows like Mr. America in Los Angeles, Mr. Pacific Coast in San Francisco, Mr. East Coast, Mr. France in France, and Mr. Universe and Mr. Olympia in South Africa. All the major bodybuilding stars in the world appear in it. They believe the movie complements the book. Each makes the statements not possible in the other. Between the two, they hope that little has been left unsaid. Geographically, Gaines and Butler lived early lives apart. It wasn't until both of them had made considerable progress in their careers, Gaines in writing, Butler in photography, that they formed a journalistic team when they were nearing 30. Neither of them were deeply involved with bodybuilding. Gaines was playing football at 16 and took up weightlifting to gain size. Although he eventually packed 230 pounds on his 6'2" frame, competitive bodybuilding became only a passing thought. He worked out at the Magic City Club in Birmingham, Alabama. Butler at 16 was living in Jamaica in the Caribbean and got interested in weights at Lloyd George Young's gym in Montego Bay. His workload and travel now limit him to jogging and push-ups. Gaines is still the bodybuilder, and had he seriously trained, he could have made an imprint. But both of them grew up in the diverting climate of family affluence, hardly the prerequisite for the labors of championship bodybuilding. Charles went to prep school in Connecticut and college in Virginia at Washington and Lee, where he majored in English and art history. Along the way, he began working for a living and stopped taking money off his parents. At 18, he was already on his own. He hitchhiked and traveled. He got into the Writers' Workshop, a graduate school for writers and poets at the University of Iowa. He felt lucky to get in. For teachers, he had literary names like Kurt Vonnegut, Vance Bourgeoisie, and Dick Yates. It was 2 years of doing nothing but what he wanted to do. He had been writing short stories, plays, and poems since he was 16. He knew he had to write a novel, but he also knew he had to work, and he took a government job in Wisconsin for 3 years. He tried to write a novel, but it didn't mix with work. He was also married at the time. A friend offered Charles his home in New Hampshire while he went to work for the United Nations. Charles grabbed it and with his savings got in 2 years of writing time to complete his novel, Stay Hungry. The book was a hit, got nominated for the National Book Award and sold a lot of copies. It also sold to the movies. Charles then had the money. So when the man returned and took back his home, Charles bought a place of his own. A lot of guys write their first novels in their early 20s, said Charles, but I was almost 30 and getting on. But I'm glad I waited because it took me a while to digest my experiences. I think it made a better book. The actual writing of the book took over a year. He had quit his job. He had borrowed money from the bank and put that together with his savings. I was never so scared in my life, he said. I was way out on a limb. The novel had to work for me, and I worked hard for it. The book Pumping Iron grew directly out of the fictional Stay Hungry. There were some people who had been in the game a long time who said, "Who are these guys to write a book about bodybuilding?" Gaines said. "Well, we were in a position to do it, and we wanted to help the sport. I think we've done that with Pumping Iron. We had a massive amount of material to work with, and we tried to be accurate as possible." Charles also wrote the screenplay for Stay Hungry along with the movie's director, Bob Rafelson. He thought it didn't work out too well. "I never did like the screenplay too much," he said. "It's hard working with the director because he runs the show. It was the first time I'd ever been involved in something I couldn't do my own way. It was my material, my book. He changed it around a lot. The movie succeeds on some levels, but I don't think bodybuilding is treated fully nor accurately enough. Rafelson wanted to use it only as a color background for the central story." Although Gaines is not one of the major producers of the movie Pumping Iron, he wrote the narration and he speaks the commentary of it. "The movie treats the sport fairly and accurately. I think it's beautifully and brilliantly done. George Butler doesn't like to call it a documentary, but I would call it a feature documentary." Based on the sales of the book, the movie should be a hit. "The growth potential of the sport seems limitless," said Gaines. "The fact that Pumping Iron has sold so well and that it's the biggest selling sports book in the coming movie makes the outlook very bright for the game." When they first brought the book Pumping Iron to its publisher, Simon & Schuster, the reception was lukewarm. However, one of the editors, Dan Green, head of publicity, was enthusiastic about it right from the beginning. Between them, they managed to get the right promotion for the book, but it was an uphill fight at first. Unless you're James Michener or somebody like that, the publishing company makes you work for every dollar you spend on their book. Gaines and Butler finally got what they wanted, which included appearances on Today's Show, Dinah Shore Show, Midday Show in New York, and many other TV spots around the country. That kind of publicity sells books, and the authors enjoyed the effort that went into it. Writers often object to that kind of extra work, but Gaines and Butler were hungry for the success of their work, so bodybuilding benefited. "What's it like to write a book?" "I write every day for as long as my energy lasts. I generally start about 8 o'clock in the morning and I work until 5 with an hour break for lunch. That depends, too. People who don't write don't understand how exhausting writing is. They think that you just sit down and whip it out. It's not like that at all. When I'm working on a big project, I have to put in long days. I have to pace myself, of course. If I start gulping for air at 11, I'm pretty well shot by 2 in the afternoon. But I do a lot of working out in between. I take a run in the morning and again at noon. It helps keep my energy up. I believe in a big breakfast and all that stuff. It's a job like anything else. It's like working in a crane or being a plumber. You put in the hours and you produce pages. How many words can you write a day?" "If I do 1,000, I'm doing good," Charles allows. "I've been working on a new novel since 1972, since I finished Stay Hungry. I wrote 4 chapters and then I stopped to do Pumping Iron to meet the contest season in 74. The novel was interrupted again when Bob Rafelson called me to help do the movie Stay Hungry. That took another year. After such long breaks, it's hard to get back to the project started so many years ago." Gaines has had to continue doing magazine articles to keep his income up to where he needs it to write his books. He sort of has it made at this point, and he can write for any magazine he cares to. He writes most for Esquire, but he's appeared in Sports Illustrated, Harper's, American Sportsman, We, and others. He's been around the block on journalism. In general, he follows a sporting theme. One of the nice things about writing is that it allows you to intellectualize and then articulate the things you most like to do. Most people never realize that luxury. They bowl or play basketball, but they don't know why they like to do those things. I like big game fishing, he continued. So in order to write about it, I have to think about it and what it means to me. I have to analyze, describe, and articulate it. It's a way of possessing it. Most people don't own their experiences. Most of my interests happen to be sporting in one way or another. I saw that I had an opportunity to spend my time doing those things that I like to do and writing about them, so I feel lucky. Meanwhile, George Butler continues to put the finishing touches on his movie, Pumping Iron. We're making a movie about bodybuilding, which we hope will reach the widest possible audience, said George. We're also hoping it's a movie that is true to bodybuilding ideals and that the people who see it will feel that we did justice to the subject. He took the book Pumping Iron around, trying to interest the motion picture studios in making the movie of it. No one was interested. George told himself, if no one else will do it, then I'm going to do it. He was fortunate in finding the best technicians to help him. According to George, they were attracted not so much to what he himself said, but by the color and uniqueness of the subject itself. Financing, of course, has turned out to be a bear. In all, there are about 20 investors in the film. He had it budgeted in the beginning at $250,000, but it is now nearing the half-million mark. It has kept him hustling. During the 18 months of production, they shot 230,000 feet of film, the equivalent of 110 hours of projection time. Butler himself did all the directing. He thinks he could possibly make training films with all the leftover footage. Butler was born in England 32 years ago. With a father in the British Army, George became a well-traveled kid. North Africa, East Africa, and the West Indies. He attended school in Massachusetts and college in North Carolina. Someday I'd like to make a movie about Sandow, said George. It's a rare subject. Sandow was the highest paid entertainer in the world. I have a person in mind to play the feature role. I won't tell you who he is, but he's Austrian. He's now working on a distribution deal for the picture and figures it'll open in Los Angeles and New York in the coming year, followed by national distribution. As far as the movie Stay Hungry is concerned, George thinks that it should have been all about bodybuilding instead of trying not to be about bodybuilding. They spent $3 million on it. With that kind of money, I could have made a great film about bodybuilding. I have a lot of respect for Rafelson as a director, but I don't think he understood bodybuilding. Butler mentioned that the trade journal Box Office reported that Arnold Schwarzenegger upstaged both Jeff Bridges and Sally Fields. It was obvious that Rafelson had missed the point. The feeling both in and out of bodybuilding is that they missed a $3 million opportunity to make a movie about muscles that might have pulled like another Jaws. What does he think will make Pumping Iron a hit? The subject fascinates everyone. Arnold has much drawing power. It'll generate a lot of word of mouth and open bodybuilding up to a national audience. I really hope. Butler insists on calling it a feature-length movie, not a documentary. It has a storyline and a major star, he says. It has acting. There are stories that cut back and forth between Arnold and Lou Ferrigno and Mike Katz and Ken Waller during the Africa Mr. Universe. The hustle for distribution continues. Major distributors have viewed the film. It could possibly open in the Cinema One in New York and Westwood in Los Angeles. George doesn't rule out a possible opening at Radio City. As you know, it's very hard to convince certain people that there's a big audience for a film on bodybuilding, he says. They're going to learn the hard way if they don't take the bait right now. Reception of all the viewers so far has been extremely favorable. Even Jaws had its production troubles, and it looked like a loser when it quickly ran through its $3 million budget. It was completed with an additional $5 million. A short film clip of Pumping Iron Butler has shown to limited bodybuilding audiences so far has proved to be as delightful as Jaws was terrifying. Pumping Iron has been a year and a half in the making. They have been all over the world. They've taken a daring crack at a novel subject. With a comparatively low budget of $500,000, its potential remains great. Other low budgets made it big, like the surf flick, Endless Summer. If you can bring home a low-cost winner, that makes you a genius in the picture industry. Butler has worked hard. He deserves a lot of credit. George and Charles have been close friends for the past 7 years. Although they combined energies to give the world a wonderful insight into the game of bodybuilding, each goes his own way. Gaines is a writer, Butler is a movie producer and director. It should be particularly interesting to watch these two careers develop. Right now, Gaines is writing his new novel and romping on his 30-acre farm in Concord, New Hampshire, surrounded by chickens, hens, apples, and horses, and doing what he likes best, skiing, hiking, fishing, hunting, and canoeing. Also, he judges bodybuilding contests. It's a specialized thing, and it takes a lot of practice, said Charles. In my narration of Pumping Iron, I fully explain what the judges do look for in the bodybuilding contest. I think people want to know how judges judge. It's a matter of time now. Bodybuilding is starting to roll. Charles Gaines and George Butler have leaned heavily on the wheel. They've become spokesmen. They've taken the facts of bodybuilding and given them the power to enchant in a way man has always best understood, with art and drama. Wow, that was interesting. A lot of good backstory of Charles Gaines and George Butler. And of course, we know that that movie went on to become an iconic classic that has stood the test of time. Crazy that it's almost 50 years since that movie came out. I like how George said, he goes, we could make some training footage from the outtakes from all that 110 hours of footage. And here we are almost 50 years later, still waiting for that to be released. But if you get my newsletter, all my Patreon donors get a newsletter from me each week. I was talking about the clips that are appearing on Instagram from Pumping Iron. I don't know who's doing it. I don't know if Arnold is doing it, or maybe it was that documentary that they came out with that brought this out. But they've been releasing a lot of clips from Pumping Iron, which is really, really exciting. All right. This next one is written by our main man, Rick Wayne, greatest writer in bodybuilding. This was for Muscle Mag International, not Muscle Builder. It was the winter of 1976, or December 1976. And it's called The Bodybuilder's Movie at Last. Said George Butler had to go to church for his first He-Man experience. It happened in Jamaica in the West Indies, where I grew up, he relates. And you suspect the whole retrospective view is not without its own very special thrill for the man. I'd never seen a muscle guy before, and I guess I'd never forget the experience. Would you believe it happened in a church? At a political rally, in fact. They had this muscle contest on, by candlelight. The whole thing was so fantastic. It certainly made a lasting impact on me. And so it's not at all surprising that the first movie about bodybuilders as they really are had to be made by Mr. Butler, who you will recall was responsible for the intriguing photographs accompanying Charles Gaines' blockbuster book, Pumping Iron. The book has been through 14 printings, is a national bestseller, was a New York Times hit, and a Book of the Month Club selection, not to mention the fact that it is certainly the most popular sports journal of all time. To think it almost never surfaced. Butler tells the story. The idea of Pumping Iron came from Charles and me. Charles was about to publish a novel called Stay Hungry, and he asked me to take the pictures for the article that he was going to do for Sports Illustrated. The article centered on a Mr. East Coast physique contest that was being held in Massachusetts. I went down there with him, and the kick that I experienced at that first muscle show in Jamaica was still there. I thoroughly enjoyed the whole thing. When we handed in the story to Sports Illustrated, the photo editor laughed and said this was the very first time the magazine would be doing a story on bodybuilding, and that it would also be the last. They hated it. But after the magazine appeared on the stands, it was a completely different story. The bodybuilding article brought in more mail than any other in that issue, or any other in the history of the magazine. Then Charles Gaines and I learned about the IFBB World Bodybuilding Championships that were being held that year in Baghdad. We got in touch with Ben Weider at the Mr. America contest in New York, and he invited us to go to the championships with him. Charles and I got the last assignment Life magazine gave out to cover it. Unfortunately, while we were in Baghdad, Life folded. But we didn't know that until we finished the article. We were so entranced by what we saw in Baghdad that when we arrived at the airport with Mike Katz and Ed Corney, it was about 2 a.m., but there was 500 people waiting to greet the physique stars. Even the army was there, and some of the officers went back and forth tapping Katz and Corney on their chests with their silver swastiks. That evening, the president of the country gave a dinner for 1,000 people, and then the next day he held the contest, the IFBB Mr. Universe. We discovered that bodybuilding was considered a national sport by the people of Baghdad, and the event was covered live in television all over the Middle East. More than that, there was something like 20,000 people in the streets who couldn't get in to see the contest, and the army people had to be brought in to keep them from storming the theater. Charles and I were fascinated by all this. What really floored us was the way the massive Mike Katz was beaten by a smaller, more symmetrically built man like Ed Corney. Katz's sportsmanship was particularly refreshing, And all in all, we got a good feeling about bodybuilding as a sport, something that neither of us really felt before, even though, as I've said, I've enjoyed bodybuilding on one or two previous occasions. So we decided finally to do our own book. But having written Pumping Iron, there remained the little matter of getting a publisher to take it, a rough task, as Charles and Butler would discover. Doubleday was going to publish the book, but then they came to us and said, look, we'll take it because of your reputations, but we won't publish the book because we like it. We don't think there's an audience for it. So we went to another publisher who said more or less the same thing. And then there were those who told us outright that we were wasting our time with a book about bodybuilding. Finally, we went to Simon & Schuster, who was very enthusiastic, but even they cut the book's first edition from 15,000 to 7,000 copies because they were not sure about an audience for this type of material. Since then, of course, Pumping Iron has been through 14 printings, and now there's over 102,000 copies now in print. It looks like it will easily swell to well over 150,000 copies. Not bad for a book that started out without an audience. Still, many bodybuilders feel the bestseller doesn't begin to get into bodybuilding. The way Butler explains it, this being the first decent book on the subject, it'll obviously draw much criticism from everyone, one way or the other. It's a pioneer effort. But the fact of the matter is that it was not aimed at just the bodybuilder. We aimed it at the broadest possible audience because we wanted America to realize there's a sport here that is also an art and that so many people have missed out on. We wanted to say that it would be well worth the time to go to a physique show. We wanted people who knew nothing about bodybuilding until Pumping Iron to go out there and examine the sport and see for themselves that it was a terrific thing that had somehow got mixed up with a lot of bad commercialism that hurt it. We wanted them to know that there were a lot of extraordinary people, people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Mike Katz, Leon Brown, Franco Colombo, involved in the sport, who had been tarnished unfairly. And we think our book has gone a long way towards achieving the right image for bodybuilding. Pumping Iron was the best balance we could strike in terms of the ardent bodybuilder and the Mr. Average man in the street. So how does a two-man team so in love with bodybuilding turn out what this writer considers a pain in the rear to bodybuilding, the movie Stay Hungry? Well, first of all, I wish to say that I had nothing to do with Stay Hungry, neither as a movie nor the novel. But if you read the book carefully, you'll see that Charles Gaines treats bodybuilding very well indeed. The screenplay for the movie was written by Charles and Bob Rafelson, but it was Bob's film and not Charles's. And for that reason, I can assure you that anything that bodybuilders consider miscast about the sport and the movie Stay Hungry is due to the people who made it, other than Charles. Charles went through tremendous effort to try to cast it in the most favorable kind of light. You have to remember that when you've got 100 different people working on a movie, 99 out of that 100 not knowing a thing about bodybuilding, much of what Charles had to say would be weighed against heavily by other points of view. And anyway, Stay Hungry is not a movie about bodybuilding. But Butler's Pumping Iron certainly is. It's also the greatest thing ever done for and about the sport. The story deals mainly with the 1975 IFBB bodybuilding championships that were held in Pretoria, South Africa. There are incredible scenes at Gold's Gym in Santa Monica when Arnold Schwarzenegger returned from making Stay Hungry in Alabama with just about 6 weeks to regain 35 pounds of muscle that he had been ordered to shed for his part as Santo. The torture sessions, the kidding in the gym, the camaraderie, the pain and the glory of bodybuilding as bodybuilders know and feel it are all there, photographed in wonderful color. Arnold Schwarzenegger shines as bodybuilding's leading light, which, damn it, he is. The Schwarzenegger personality, the Schwarzenegger wit, it's a saber-edged intact, are all there in Pumping Iron, a treat that muscle fans will want to savor. Not to be missed are the backstage scenes at the championships in South Africa, the tears and the Bonhomie, Mike Katz, Ed Corney, Ken Waller, just about every one of the world's leading muscle stars is in this fabulous movie. Butler had photographed us, I almost said in the raw, as we really are. And the dialogue is simply incredible, from Schwarzenegger's gut-wrenching quips to Mike Katz's spells of introspection. How did Butler do it? Well, I got to know the stars really well before I got involved with Pumping Iron as a movie, he says. I knew exactly where to be with the camera and the mic at the right time, and I was right there. The result is a movie that bodybuilders the world over will love and cherish. What Butler and Gaines missed in their book, Butler has certainly made up for with this fantastic movie. So now what's left? We're probably going to release the movie ourselves initially, but a number of top studios have expressed an interest in it. I'd like the movie to be a critical success. I'd like it to win an Academy Award. And most of all, I'd like it to change America's point of view about this wonderful sport called bodybuilding, says Butler. Chances are George Butler will get every wish with the movie version of Pumping Iron. After all, Endless Summer, which was released privately, did gross $31 million. And On Any Sunday and Billy Jack, all box office blockbusters, did not have the backing of major studios. Certainly bodybuilders, who primarily were responsible for the fantastic success of the Gladiator movies, can make Pumping Iron a hit. Hell, it's a movie about us, as we really are. And we look good, I'll tell you. Pumping Iron deserves to be a hit. As an added treat, when the movie opens in New York soon, Butler will have on hand some of the country's top physique stars helping with the publicity. What more could any bodybuilding fan ask for? Just be there when your local theater offers Pumping Iron. And says Rick Wayne is the editor of Muscle Build. The end. All right. And I got another one here from Muscle Mag International. This is from, let's see, spring 1977. So February 1977. And this is the preview of Pumping Iron, which took place in January of 1977. And it's written by Denny. Every generation has its fads, folk heroes, styles, and brand of music. Bodybuilding in its little niche has always been timeless, with modern bodybuilding as we know it taking form in the beginning of the 20th century and evolving to its present position. The motion picture Pumping Iron is a montage of these events, combining artfully in film footage what we, the subculture of bodybuilding, will explode into the general consciousness for a better way of living. Without giving details and plaudits to those who produced it, since that is being done elsewhere in Muscle Mag and other features, we'd like to just zero in on the cinema happening itself. For avid fans of our sport, both today and yesterday, there's something of value in statement and flow. For instance, in the very beginning, along with the title credits taking up one half of the screen, fans and general public alike are treated to a rare view of our forefathers, the old-time strongmen. Where did bodybuilding come from in our modern age? It came from Eugene Sandow, Al Treloar, Anton Mateysik, and Charles Atlas. Along with the subtitles comes rare film of these men posing from the past. Oh, so many years ago. This alone is worth twice the price of the box office tariff. During this particular preview, which took place at the Allied Artists Screening Room on the 8th floor of the Gulf Western Building of 60th Street in New York, the elite of the magazine and press corps were present. They included reporters from the New York Times, Newsweek, Time, Sport, Esquire, and Women's Wear Daily. All were very impressed with what they saw, for they saw bodybuilding as it has never been shown before, with warmth, understanding, sympathy, pathos, and reality. This will bring a tear to the eye of those of us who have labored so long in the hopes of igniting the light that will erase the shadows that surround the greatest sport of them all, bodybuilding. There is so much to this film, it's almost impossible to describe, for it is pure, living, clean muscle with no snags. Something that might be best described as, quote, the world's first moving muscle magazine cover, unquote. But it's deeper than that. To echo that here, I reflect on the segment which dealt with the life of champion Mike Katz when Chris Devon, president of the Professional Bodybuilders Alliance, remarked to me, Katz looks like Marlon Brando up there. And that was no understatement. Devon, who will promote his PBA World Cup Mr. Universe contest in July, was simply awed as I was by the 35-inch arms and 72-inch chest of men, champions who all appeared on the celluloid screen. We wonder who in the audience will escape the magnetism of Arnold Schwarzenegger and the main theme of his quest to be the best in the world, and all the rest who follow in his footsteps like Louis Ferrigno, Franco Colombo, Ed Corney, Ken Waller, Serge Nubre, Robbie Robinson, Denny Gable, Ed Giuliani, Dave Dupree, and Roger Callard. What is Pumping Iron about? It concerns the dreams we, you, and I hold in our secret hopes, the hunger to be number one, the fight it takes, and the sacrifice some men will go to from adolescence to manhood to achieve that quest, which leaves a healthful and lasting mark on all those around them in our common universe. You'll note those exaggerated measurements in the arms and chest areas, along with the underpinnings mentioned earlier, the 35-inch arm and 70-inch chest, because the images themselves of these men are projected on the screen 20 feet tall. Here's some of the montage you'll see. Arnold and Franco taking ballet lessons in an effort to bring grace to their posing, truly a tribute to satire. Bombing in Gold's Gym. Schwartz posing in an exhibition at the inmates of Terminal Island Prison, telling a female reporter he'd like to give her a kiss, and a hardened male convict yelling at Arnold, "Why don't you give me a kiss?" Arnold retorting, "Sorry, but no, I heard about you guys in here." The gentle giant Mike Katz, his life and family, his fight to win, and the dramatic pathos of his private soul-searching and loss, the most poignant scene in the film. Ken Waller playing football with Callard and Robinson, playing the pranks he used to psych Katz out at the Baghdad Mr. Universe. Joe Weider in his Woodland Hills office supervising a photographic session in the house studio. Girls, Arnold, and all. Strength scenes and training on the beach with real live weights between 300 and 400 pounds on the bench. The life story of Louis Ferrigno, his problems, impediments, and the family's support of his bodybuilding quest. His father Maddie's devotion to help Louis become the world's best-built man. Louis's ultimate goal to beat Arnold for the Mr. Olympia. The dark weight training dungeons of the American East Coast versus the modern training quarters of the land of eternal sun on the West Coast. The life and athletic career of Franco Colombo, Italy's champion prize fighter turned world's strongest man and bodybuilding idol. His home in Sardinia, including a rope skipping scene that proves muscle bound and slow are fool's terms when applied to bodybuilders. The recent Mr. Olympia in Pretoria, South Africa. The Arnold and Louis psychouts and the significance of hearing Reg Park speak, plus so much more. It's impossible to cover at this time. The bodybuilding world owes a great debt to George Butler for conceiving this opus based on the Charles Gaines George Butler best-selling book, which runs gallantly and admirably with respect and love for our sport for a full 85 minutes. It is better than any muscle magazine you've ever read because it moves with action being directed by Butler and Mike Fiore. It travels around the world being produced by Butler and Jerome Gary and stays tight because of the editing of Larry Silk and Jeff Bartz. Plus, it sings the praises of the mightiest men to date in the history of the bodybuilding world because of lyrics and music by Michael Small and the soundtrack of Harry Lampum. Pumping Iron, which premiered at the Plaza Theater in New York City on January 17th, might better have opened at the famous New York Museum of Art because it is quite simply more than a film. It is a masterpiece. And as such, it'll go down in the annuals of filmmaking as visual entertainment that for this day and age is not just unusual, but quite extraordinary. See it. All right. That's some positive phrase, huh? All right. I got one more. I'm not sure if I ever read this article for you guys before, but I thought I'd read it again because it ties in with our subject matter. This comes from the April 1977 issue of Muscle Builder Magazine. And it's titled, "They Loved Him with the Clothes On," by Janet Charlton. And of course, this is the big Pumping Iron premiere that took place in January of 1977. It said the kids wearing high school jackets from Brooklyn got there first. They had Muscle Builder and Power magazines in hand, and they were waiting for their idols to arrive and autograph their pictures. Despite near zero temperatures, the roped-off crowd around New York's Plaza Theater thickened as Klieg lights crisscrossed the sky Hollywood-style for the much-publicized premiere of Pumping Iron. New Yorkers were dying to see Arnold in person. They'd been bombarded with Pumping Iron posters showing Ed Corney as he appeared on the cover of the book, on subways, buses, and any available fences and walls. All the newspapers and magazines interviewed Arnold and wrote about his showing up at chic gallery openings, socialite parties. They wrote about how he chatted with Jackie Kennedy and hung out with famous models and actors at Elaine's. What's more, they turned up on every talk show in town. One talk show appearance was especially memorable. It was the midday live show, and Arnold was the only male guest with the top 10 professional women of the year under the age of 35, as selected by Esquire magazine. Arnold showed clips of the film and then took off his shirt and demonstrated some exercises. Afterwards, the talk show host asked the girls what they thought about Arnold's body. One business lady replied, "I don't care much about muscles, but I do admire dedication." Another answered, "I prefer endurance sports, not bodybuilding." Arnold was quick to reply, "Bodybuilding is an endurance sport." The girl retorted, "I mean something like running." "I run every day," Arnold growled. "5 miles in a half hour. What do you run?" he leered at her. "Yes, I run a mile." "When you're a bodybuilder," he triumphed, "you can run 5 miles." The least attractive of the 10 women volunteered that she preferred the show's host, untoned body, to Arnold's. The delighted host turned to Arnold and asked, "What do you think of that?" Arnold shrugged, "Well, look where it comes from. I have 20 beautiful women a day chasing me at the Park Lane Hotel asking for sex. Do you think if this woman moved into the Park Lane that 20 men would chase her every day? The 10 businesswomen blanched, and Arnold wrapped up the show with the following observations. I think some of these women are afraid to admire my body because their ugly husbands are at home watching them on TV. Also, remember, unfeminine women are uncomfortable around masculine men, and some of these women are abnormally career-oriented. You can imagine how the women livers were burning up the telephone wires to the TV studio after that discussion. But for every girl that turned up her nose at muscles, there were five that went absolutely crazy for them. After the big buildup, Arnold could no longer walk down the street or eat in a restaurant without being molested, much to his delight, and he good-naturedly offered his bicep to all the pretty girls who asked for a feel, slyly suggesting they touch his thigh as well. It's rumored that those who took him up on it stood a good chance of being invited back to his hotel. A profusion of love notes and direct propositions, sometimes photographs were included, awaited Arnold at his hotel every night. Between these and the telephone invitations, he was kept pretty busy around the clock. Ah, the sweet smell of success. The day of the premiere, the newspapers made a big fuss out of Arnold dressing up in his first custom-made tuxedo. Perfect timing because Arnold needed a tux for the Foreign Press Golden Globes Award show. He was nominated for Best Acting Debut in a Motion Picture, male. The tabloids were plastered with photos of Arnold coyly curled up on his underwear, talking on the phone to his date for the evening, and adjusting his bow tie in the mirror. Newsweek took cover photos of Arnold and told him he'd probably make the cover if another Gary Gilmore didn't come along in the meantime. Big Arnold arrived early the night of the premiere with his date, glamorous Delfina Ratazzi, and his mother and cousin Carl, and the crowd shrieked and lunged at him for a touch. While flash bulbs popped and TV lights blinded everyone with the reporters yelled, "Pose with Delfina, pose with your mother," etc. An old lady ran up and said, "I must feel this whole body," and proceeded to do so while Arnold yelled, "What's going on here?" The high school kids from Brooklyn rushed the Elvis of bodybuilding for autographs and presented him with a t-shirt with a four-color painting of himself on it. So engrossed were the fans that they hardly noticed when Jennifer O'Neill arrived with her date, John Revson, from the Revlon era. They noticed Paul Simon, though, and cheered loudly. Paul has been showing up at all the muscle events lately, and when someone asked why, he replied, "I love anything to do with bodybuilding, maybe because I'm not exactly Hercules myself." Carol Baker popped out of a limousine looking still like a dressed-up version of the thumb-sucking baby doll that made her famous. "How come she never ages?" whispered a woman in the crowd. "How old are you?" shouted a bolder fan. Obviously accustomed to the question, Carol cracked, "I'm 64," and breezed in the door. James Taylor pulled his pregnant wife, Carly Simon, by the hand when she stopped to flex her bicep for the Brooklyn Boys. "No, he's so vain" wasn't written about a bodybuilder. Soon the lobby was jammed with Tony Perkins and his wife, Barry Bernanson, who was wearing gold cowboy boots, Andy Warhol's sweetheart, Paulette Goddard, Sylvia Miles, and assorted well-dressed socialites such as Diana Vreeland. Arnold circulated kissing pretty girls with a warning, "Don't get lipstick on me." Uniformed guards chased off would-be gatecrashers. Last to arrive were the bodybuilders scheduled to pose after the film. Mike Katz and his family were all smiles. Ed Corney was frustrated. "I heard my picture is all over town, but everybody's calling me Arnold." Robbie Robinson got a lot of attention, decked out in his diamond earring and flowing black velvet cape. Arnold greeted him loudly as Blackula. Husky Lou Ferrigno sported a new set of braces on his teeth. Does he have a movie career in mind? And immediately asked, "Where's the party after?" Mike Mentzer fascinated reporters when he told them he was studying for his doctorate in philosophy. Muscles are not enough. Franco Colombo didn't forget his trusty hot water bottle. The audience obviously loved the film. Incidentally, it is now breaking box office records in New York. They empathized with Mike Katz when he said, "It took me 5 years to win Mr. Connecticut. I'm not a quitter." Women flipped for Lou Ferrigno, said he brought out their maternal instincts. A few minutes into the film, an older woman was heard to whisper to her companion, "Is this movie X-rated?" Another woman watched Arnold flex on celluloid and sighed, "Now that's what I call a man." Viewers were delighted with Arnold's sense of humor. In the movie, a reporter asked Arnold if he drank a lot of milk. He replied, "Milk is for babies. When you grow up, you drink beer." Pumping Iron is a documentary with a lot of intelligence and humor. It showed the incredible self-discipline necessary to become a top contender, and then investigated the personal lives of some of the men at the top as they prepared for the Mr. Olympia contest. An especially appealing segment was filmed in Sardinia as Franco Colombo dined on pasta with his big family there. The hero comes home. It's obvious that this film will serve its purpose well. It'll give bodybuilding the attention as a sport that it deserves. After the movie, Master of Ceremonies Arnold grabbed the mic and showed off his tux to the audience. Now that George Butler, he produced and directed the film, bought me a tuxedo, I can go to lots of openings, he winked. You just know the audience was dying for Arnold to strip, but he declined and he brought out Franco to do his strongman act instead. Franco bent a steel bar with his teeth and handed it to a man in the front row to straighten it out. Well, he could hardly lift it. Then Franco pulled out his hot water bottle and proceeded to blow it up while the first three rows hid under their seats. After the explosion, the five bodybuilders posed. Mike Capps was right. Audiences do love him. Lou Ferrigno's newly acquired confidence was evident to all, and his delighted fans screamed for more. Robbie successfully concealed his nervousness. I was never so scared in my life. And he showed that he was in great shape. Ed Corney's smooth posing was loudly admired, while Mike Katz deftly revealed why all the bodybuilders are talking about him. Through it all, the ushers shrugged in amazement. Arnold wrapped up the show by having all five bodybuilders come back on stage for a pose-off. All those muscles at once were more than some of the women could handle. It's like a smorgasbord, squealed one pretty model. Then he called Carol Baker up on stage so she could take a close look at all that beefcake. She slithered from man to man, feeling their muscles with obvious pleasure. Lou Ferrigno said, "Go ahead, touch me anywhere," and she gave him an appreciative caress. Then Carol walked over to Arnold and said, "I want you to know all this masculinity has had little effect on me," and she proceeded to fake a faint in his arms. After the show was over, about 400 people were invited to the New York Steakhouse and the Time Life building for the post-premiere party. Mike Katz skipped the party because he had a long drive home, but he stopped long enough to comment on how he really liked himself in the film. "I think it was a clear reflection of how I felt at the time, like I was looking into a mirror. I think they caught my personality quite accurately." On the way out of the theater, Lou Ferrigno was now asking, "Where's the Time Life building?" The boys from Brooklyn followed the train of cabs and limousines to the party. They'd follow Arnold to the ends of the earth. The party was packed and dazzling, and the bodybuilders got all the attention. Monique Van Voren told Earl Wilson, "I find the muscle men very interesting. There was one in Milwaukee that I liked very much. Unfortunately," she added, "his wife liked him too." Reporters were astonished to find Arnold so articulate and amusing. A newsman asked Arnold who he thought would win the next Mr. Olympia contest, and Arnold shrugged, "I cannot comment on that subject because I promote that contest, and bodybuilders are so paranoid that they think I fixed the contest against them or for someone else." Arnold's mother, freshly arrived from Austria, who surely has one of the firmest female handshakes of all time, had lots of questions thrown at her, and Arnold's cousin, Carl, translated. She said that Arnold was slender and had all the childhood diseases until he was 14, and then he started working out and got big. No, she admitted that she never expected him to achieve such fame and fortune, and she's very proud. Franco said he liked himself in the movie, but he wasn't so crazy about Arnold saying that they had a father-son relationship. "My wife especially hated it. She took it very serious." Arnold interrupted him with, "That's because she wants me to look up to her for advice and not me." Ed Corney and Robbie Robinson carefully avoided the chocolate mousse and pecan pie at the buffet and heaped their plates with rare roast beef and grapefruit halves. Women kept accidentally bumping into Lou Ferrigno in the buffet line. "He would be in heaven in a crowded subway," giggled one behind the oblivious Lou's back. An inquiring reporter asked Lou how he liked himself in the movie. Lou allowed, "The film made me a star also. It'll help me make me the next Mr. Olympia." The reporter flexed his slender arm for Lou, who took one look and said, "Keep working out. In 20 years, you'll be normal." Lou explained that the braces on his teeth were not just for cosmetic reasons, but will help him pronounce his S's better when his teeth are straightened. He added that he's glad to be working out in California thanks to Joe Weider and working close to him. He already has a girlfriend there. Then a photographer grabbed Lou and said, "Come here, I want to get a picture of you strangling the waitress," and off they went. Mr. Universe of 1963, Harold Poole, didn't come to the party, but he sent his best wishes to Arnold and promised that he's getting in shape this time, and this time he really means it. Tall, dark, and handsome George Gaines should be Charles Gaines, exclaimed to everyone that he couldn't believe the movie was even better than his book. George did a beautiful job of visualizing my idea. George Butler patted Arnold on the back and said, I promised you 2 years ago that in 1977, New Yorkers would learn to respect bodybuilding, and what I told you came true. Arnold agreed and was reaping the side benefits of success. At least 15 women here propositioned me tonight, he confessed, but I told them all I was too busy. The intellectual world is falling on its knees in front of me, he added slyly, and indeed he was right. Arnold had New York by the tail. Everybody wanted to get next to him. If it weren't for Arnold, there would have been no pumping iron as it was. Arnold sipped a cup of coffee and watched as the last of the partygoers said goodnight. Still waiting patiently outside the door were the high school kids from Brooklyn. They waited all those hours just for another look at Arnold. Our main man, they shouted excitedly when they saw him and crowded around him as he walked out, asking questions a mile a minute. All right. Interesting article by Janet Charlton. I guess she also wrote an article for another issue of Muscle Builder called Confessions of a Girl Who Loves Muscle Men. So I think she was a actual reporter for some of the magazines, and she wrote a couple articles for Muscle Builder. So that had to be a great event, that premiere of Pumping Iron. And then, of course, they also did the posing at the Whitney Museum a year earlier in 1976, and that's how they raised the money to finish Pumping Iron, which, like the article said, took about a year and a half because they filmed all those contests in 1975 in November, and they were filming over the summer in Gold's Gym when Arnold was training, and then was not released until January of 1977. So anyways, interesting look back at when bodybuilding was treated with respect and it was really being discovered by the general public, and they were fascinated by it. They loved it. And then, of course, in the 1980s, the sport of bodybuilding and weightlifting in general, and muscles in particular, were very popular. And that's when all the action movies came out. And then, like I said, since then, you know, that whole steroid stigma kind of ruined the sport. And now we have movies like that one I saw this weekend where the bodybuilders are just portrayed as psychotics who use steroids. So we got a long way to go with our image of bodybuilding still after all these years in 2024. All right, guys, that's it for another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I'll work on getting some guests next week. Until then, have a great week. Stay safe, train hard, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.